Howdy and welcome to River Talk, a river podcast hosted by Priscilla Macy, Zach Collier, and me, Eric Weistad. This week, our big topic is rowdy whitewater rafting, talking with Jeff Compton, one of the rowdiest rafters out there. But before we get to that, we'd like to start with news of the week. So Zach, Priscilla, do you have anything you want to talk about?
I'll start. First of all, Boatsmith is coming up. For those of you who don't know, it's a big festival, February 14th to 17th on the Smith River. It's one of my favorite places in the world to paddle. There's everything from like class one flat water to class five steep creeks. And the event, as I understand it, is basically Saturday, there's going to be some races. Sunday, there's going to be a mass float down the North Fork of the Smith, which some might say is the best section of whitewater in the world. I mean, it's not hardest, but it's just beautiful. It's continuous. It's really special. And then Monday, kind of, I think people are just doing their own thing. And so it's a great chance to celebrate the Smith. And I think the proceeds go to help a children's school in the small town of Gaski, which is super cool, too.
That's awesome.
So if you like festivals and like boaters, February 14th to 17th on the Smith River.
Very cool. Priscilla, do you have anything?
I do not have anything.
Wow.
That's weird. I'm shocked. I've been sick for
the last few days, so I've been out of the loop.
The news I would have too is, Priscilla, you're working for Outdoor Alliance now, which is a pretty cool thing. Congratulations on that.
True. Thank you. Yes. I guess that is news. I will be working for Outdoor Alliance doing campaign coordination kind of throughout the different regional networks. So not just in Oregon, but all throughout the U.S. that Outdoor Alliance represents. So really excited about starting that.
Yeah, congratulations.
Super cool. That's great.
Yeah.
I would just, I'll pitch it again. The Idaho Outfitter and Guides Association annual fundraiser is coming up in Boise on the 19th of February. And the speakers are going to be awesome. So if you're a boater and you like hearing people talk about rad adventures, that'll be a thing to be at. It's going to be a lot of fun. And also there's going to be tons of, raffled off gear. I think there's going to be some rafts that get raffled off. And also some really cool kind of adventure trips in Idaho. So if you're in the Boise area on the 19th, I would strongly recommend coming. I think it's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, and I'm spacing on his name right now. I know Peter Fox's name, but the other guy who I should know his name.
Mark Kramer.
Yeah. I would claim that he is the best caterafter in the world. That's a big claim, but he's run the most big, gnarly stuff anybody's ever done. And he doesn't talk about it that much. He wrote a book about it, of course. But, to hear him speak about some of his adventures, it sounds pretty cool.
Yeah, I'm really excited to hear the two of them kind of go back and forth. I think it's sort of the first time they've gotten up and done something like this, and they both seem really excited, so I think it's going to be cool.
Yeah, and they it's cool. They both have so much respect for each other.
Yeah.
Peter Fox, who was the first person to be part of a rafting trip on the Stikine, then Mark Kramer went and did it in a creature craft, like 20 years later or something. They both have respect for each other's accomplishments there, and I think they're going to talk well together.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm really looking forward to it. So, but I think the $70 or whatever it is to get in the door includes your food and things is worth it for, it's a fundraiser, making money. Supporting a good cause.
So to go, it costs $70 and you get, you get food and a good time.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Some of that kind of stuff. It's one of those, it's a fundraiser dinner. But it's totally going to be worth it for the speaker and just, there's going to be, you probably get some good deals on gear through the silent auction and the other stuff. So
how many ways can you win a gun?
I think there's going to be at least one raffle, and the odds are pretty good because I think they're going to do one of the card ones. So there's only like 52 cards and you're going to be one of them. So your odds are pretty good.
Cool. For those of you that haven't been to Idaho meetings, maybe the best part is that you can win a gun and go home with a gun.
Totally possible. Welcome to Idaho. Outstanding. Awesome. Well, should we introduce our speaker or our guest this week? Go for it, Zach.
Yeah, so our guest is Jeff Compton, and I met Jeff when he moved to Oregon a few years ago at some meeting or something, and I learned through talking to him that we have a mutual friend, Rory Gotham, who was one of my mentors early on, and after I left California, he boated with her a ton. And I know anybody who's a boater with Rory is badass, and Jeff quickly like came to Oregon and just started running everything big out here, met Dan McCain, and they just went on a spree of running big whitewater stuff. And I would have to say, like, you know, I think he may be, you know, him and Dan together may be the best R tours in the world. That might be a bold claim, but from what I've seen, they've just gone so big. So I'm excited to get to know more about Jeff in this episode. So yeah, Jeff, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Zach. I'm really happy that you asked me to be on. It's a real cool thing you guys are doing, and I'm stoked to be a part of it.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I'll just start off with a question. We're just going to ask you some random questions and see where the conversation goes. But first, like, how did you get into rafting?
So when I was 10 years old, well, in elementary school, I had a teacher who had done a Grand Canyon trip and showed pictures to our class, and it got me interested in it. And when I was 10 years old, I did a trip with my twin brother and my grandmother and my mom on the lower portion of the Grand Canyon, and kind of decided I wanted to be a raft guide when I grew up. So, 16, I went to guide school and just kind of went from there.
Where did you grow up? And where did you go to guide school?
I went to guide school in California. There used to be a company out there called Wilderness Adventures, and they ran it was known as like the gnarly guide school, run by this dude, Roger Lee. And, I grew up kind of between Arizona and California, but I learned to raft in California.
Yeah, that guide school is definitely legendary back in the day. What did you guys do? Like, do you want to give us a quick heads up? Like, what made it gnarly? Like, what are some of the epics you guys did in that guide school?
So we had a low water year, but we started out on the Trinity, did a couple, you know, standard class 3 guide school stuff. Lots of swim and rapids. We went up and we did a 3-day lower Klamath trip where we learned to row, rig gear boats and stuff. So all that was pretty standard. Then we went over to the upper Klamath and we did a couple days up there, and it was running about 3,000. And that run it's difficult, and it has long rapids, and it's a really bad place to be swimming, kind of sharp rocks, long rapids. And so we had some pretty gnarly carnage up there. At one point, the other thing is we were still using bucket boats, even though self-bailing rafts were definitely a thing. But at one point, one boat ripped an entire floor out of a bucket boat in Hell's Corner Rapid. And, it was pretty cool. And then we finished up by doing 2 days on Burnt Ranch Gorge, which is... another sort of in the commercial rafting world, not that it gets done commercially a lot, but it's kind of considered to be one of the more difficult commercial runs in California. It's not Cherry Creek, but it might be second to Cherry Creek.
Were you guys guiding Burnt Ranch Gorge as new boaters? I mean, this is like, did you guys quickly move up to this step?
We even had one boat on the second day of Burnt Ranch Gorge. We even had one boat that was just students with no instructors in it. We were taking turns and not necessarily guiding every rapid, but we were guiding most of the rapids on Burnt Ranch Gorge during guide school.
It's like basically being thrown into the fire.
Yeah. And I mean, it was also just all day, and then we would road trip to the next spot at night, you know, not a lot of sleep. It was kind of like a rafting boot camp in a sense. And I should say, had it been a normal water year, we probably would have had more of a progression due to more springtime runoff rivers being in. And I know generally it doesn't exist anymore, but he would try and end on the Cal Salmon, not Burnt Ranch Gorge, would be kind of the goal for that school. But I don't know. It was cool. It was a really good experience. And obviously, I I mean, I've been team 20 years, still been doing it. So
you kind of cut out there a little bit. How many years you been doing it?
So I went to guide school in 2001.
Okay. Wow.
So
yeah, we used to run into some of those Roger Lee guide schools in the Cal Salmon, and it would be like five or six new people with almost no experience, just given super random boats, like no rhyme or reason, just like get in this craft and survive the Cal Salmon.
Yeah, and like not good equipment.
Yeah.
You know, like for just, the most part. We had a couple self bailers, a couple bucket boats. I definitely remember trying to inflate this boat with, it was the old school military style valves. And we were just pumping on this boat. And we finally realized that all of the baffles were blown on it. So we had all of the valves open, but the air was just going into the chamber and escaping out the other chambers, and not even inflating. So, yeah, it was pretty random gear, and definitely a good way to scare people off of rafting if they're not really into it.
But, and I mean, some legendary boaters have come out of that school. So, I mean, there's also like some of the best started there.
Yeah, for sure.
So did you work for Roger? How, from guide school, did you go work for him or did you go find a job somewhere else?
I did one summer, like living in a tent on the Trinity with my twin brother, working for Roger, kind of rent guiding for some of the other companies up there. And then sort of the next year I started working for Tributary Whitewater Tours. Which the thing about working for Roger is you just don't work that much. You're going to get to do a really cool trip here or there, some weird charter, some pirate trip on a class five river, but you're not going to work consistently as a raft guide because that company never ran all that many trips. And so I had been a rafting client with Tributary for quite a few years. I knew the owner, Dan Buckley. And so I went over and started working for them.
And that's another great company doing a lot of cool stuff. I mean, back then that was kind of their heyday too.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. There was a lot of boaters that wanted to get out and do cool rivers instead of just work. And rafters too, not necessarily kayakers.
Yeah. Well, and I noticed at some point you met Rory. How'd you meet Rory? And what are some of the cool things that you did with Rory?
I met Rory actually on a day that I dislocated my shoulder. I was kayaking at the time. I think I was 16 or 17 and was going up to do the South Yuba. She has a run that runs behind her house on the South Yuba called the Gold Quartz Run. Which is great whitewater, runnable at a wide variety of flows. But she was going to come with, and then they had a trailer issue or something and didn't. But she came and got me after I dislocated my shoulder. And then the first, like, real good trip I remember doing with Rory, we did a three-day Middle Fork Feather trip.
Awesome. And when was that?
Ooh. Maybe 2004.
Okay. And then through that time, what are some of the awesome runs you did in California?
I still, my favorite run in California maybe is the 49 to Bridgeport section on the South Fork Yuba. A great thing about working for Tributary, you know, we could be up on the Upper Klamath or Burnt Ranch. We went down as far south as the Kaweah. A lot of times we would try and run kind of other things if we were on a road trip, you know, we'd go do the Upper Klamath and then we'd wind up on the McLeod or Tacoma Gorge on the North Fork Rogue. Or we'd go up and do a Lower Klamath trip and hit Burnt Ranch Gorge on the way home or something. So, you know, a lot of the boating I did was on technically commercial runs, but ones that don't get done that often. I mean, it's hard to beat the middle feather. It's a pretty amazing stretch. Yeah. Fordyce Creek kind of stands out. And then through one of the managers there, Leo, in 2005, I went down to southeastern Mexico and we brought a little 10-foot raft and got to do some really cool stuff down there as well on the Alsaseca River and a few others. And then, I guess another, you know, in terms of early kind of social media presence and stuff, we did, there was an old kayaking movie which showed some rafting, and there was a couple guys, Dustin Lindgren, who's the brother of the famous kayaker Scott Lindgren, and Robbie Hogue, and this guy Shane Ryerson, who was the manager for Tributary at the time, did a first raft descent on South Silver Creek, and they did it in Tributary boats. And so around that, and I'm not sure exactly when that happened, but around that time, shortly thereafter, a bunch of Tributary guides went out and did South Silver Creek, which at the time was kind of considered to be like the steepest mile of runnable white water. And I don't think that's the case anymore. It's not necessarily a super difficult run, but it's really dramatic looking.
For rafts, maybe. And it's like, there's 1 mile that's 700 feet, I think.
Yeah.
So that's pretty steep.
It's incredibly steep. And it's an incredible, it's incredible that it exists. Just that steep and that totally clean. In rafts, it's definitely a bit of a novelty. You know, you can't get much purchase on, it's just not enough water going over the granite to really do a ton of maneuvering, and it's too narrow to be technical. But it is really fun, and we got some cool footage, and it became kind of a popular YouTube video.
Along with the guy supping it, there's a YouTube video of a guy attempting to sup it, and he just ate shit.
He broke his leg, didn't he?
Oh, I don't. I mean, he should have broken his leg at least.
Yeah.
So after time in California, what got you to move to Oregon?
I mean, I was actually not living in California. I was living down. For a while, I was just doing summers in California, and I was living in Arizona. I went to college in Flagstaff, Arizona, and then was just kind of had been around Flagstaff for a while, was looking at different places to move. I was dating someone at the time, and I knew that there was good whitewater, and I had friends in Portland, Oregon. So in 2009, I just moved up here essentially on a whim, and the only kind of knowledge I had about rafting up here was I knew that the Oregon rafting team existed and sometimes ran difficult whitewater. So I got in touch with them when I moved up here just to kind of get out, and wound up doing the upper wind at about 8.5 feet for my first run after moving here the first winter I got here. So it's probably,
that's big. That's really big.
It was huge. Yeah, it was huge. I was got Tim Brink put me kind of, he's like, yeah, you've guided a bunch. And I assumed that the Oregon rafting team, and this was kind of when, you know, they were doing a lot. Ben Sigler and Dan McCain were both technically on the team. And we're kind of running some really cool stuff, which is how I found out about them. But I assumed that they were all kind of rafters or had a rafting background. But a lot of them were good athletes who were into rafting but didn't necessarily have a guiding background. And so I wound up guiding a raft. Tim Brink was guiding one raft that day, and he pretty much just said, hey, follow my lines. And it was super fun. Yeah, it was awesome having that kind of water with really strong, kind of disciplined paddlers. Was awesome. It was super fun.
So it was two rafts only, paddle boats, 8.5 feet.
Yeah, eight and a half, somewhere around there. But yeah, two paddle rafts.
So this is a question I'm starting to have. I'm going to do a total aside right now. What happens if a raft in that case flips? What's the safety setup there?
You know, I mean, my move would be if the other raft flipped, I would start doing a head count and paddling after people that were separated from the raft, ideally.
But 8.5 feet, can another raft realistically say, like, get to 4 or 5 people after a flip?
No, I mean, ideally people would be also, trying to self-rescue and I mean, it's a pretty unideal safety situation, on that style of river for sure. It's the continuous nature and the lack of eddies.
But isn't that part of the nature of that kind of a trip? I mean, you know what you're signing up for. Like, if you're not prepared to stare that down, like, that's not a thing you should be doing.
I think Jeff probably, and then Jeff, you can correct us here. We're on a tangent now, but I think Jeff understood and Tim understood. Maybe the rest of the group didn't. If they, you know, because it sounds like they're athletes, not boaters.
You know, I don't want to say that they weren't boaters. It was just a different, you know, I always came from a commercial background, and these guys were paddlers, not guides necessarily, which was that, I guess that was more of a statement about how I wound up guiding a raft instead of just, you know, when I was going out and meeting up with those guys, I figured I would probably be paddling for someone else as sort of the new person who had not been on the river before. And I was surprised when I wound up guiding the raft. yeah, that's an interesting question.
I worry somebody's gonna listen to this and go, oh cool, like, it's cool to go out with just two boats on a high water run like that. And I don't think it is. Like, if there were 3 or 4 kayakers there, I get it. If there was like 5 boats and a couple had oar frames, that's where my brain goes. But like 2 paddle boats on high water, I think, what happens if a boat flips? What's the safety setup there? And that scares me. You're certainly confident.
I also feel that sometimes adding, and this is, you know, this is a personal opinion. Sometimes adding more factors to the equation doesn't necessarily equate to more safety. I feel like 2 to 3 very well oiled, sort of working together boats can simplify a situation, whereas if you have 5 or 6 boats and you have multiple boats have problems at the same time, I don't necessarily think that more boats always equates to, depending on sort of the training of the run, but also, I mean, it is a run like the Wind is difficult, you know, because continuous whitewater offers the safety options are different and limited. You know, I think the two rivers that sort of have shaped Dan and I the most as boaters are the Little White Salmon and the North Fork Payette out in Idaho. And the North Fork Payette is a river where it's all roadside. You're right next to a road the whole way. You could have someone, you know, driving down, stopping, filming. You could have someone on the shore of the river at any point. But if you're out in the middle of one of those rapids, it still feels a lot like you're on your own, because getting to shore is not necessarily an easy thing to do. And I feel like the wind at high water kind of presents some of those same problems where your safety options are limited. And being a strong athlete and a strong swimmer and having an understanding of some self-rescue principles as far as, you know, getting a hold of that upside down raft so you have flotation, you know, aggressively knowing how to swim to an eddy or another raft, that you can't necessarily do that type. It's not the type of run you could do with, say, commercial clients or people that really don't have the mentality or some amount of experience with self-rescue and difficult boating. And so I guess I don't feel that having a ton of boats out there would have necessarily made it safer. Because at a certain point in the middle of a big continuous rapid, like, there's not really any amount of safety that can help sometimes.
So you're saying if you fall out on the, like, if I fell on the wind, I'm in okay shape. If I fell on the wind, I don't know if I could swim myself to shore, right? No, like, it's, but, especially 8 feet. So, like, you're basically saying if people fall out, there's not a whole lot of a catcher's mitt to get people back in.
No, well, what I'm saying is that if someone like you fell out, like, say you were in your cataract and your cataract flipped out there, you would maintain the presence of mind to try and grab onto your frame or grab onto a part of your boat as you were flipping, shortly after you were flipping, and do your best to not get separated from your boat or make it back to your physical, you know, your source of flotation as quickly as you could. Thus, if you have two paddle rafts, ideally you're not chasing down four or five swimmers, you're chasing down one or two swimmers, and the other people are working on righting their own boat and maintaining contact with their craft.
So the assumption, and that's why this is like a really good discussion, so I like having, I think I'm into it. The assumption is if a boat flips and you have three or four swimmers, those three or four swimmers can on their own swim back to that boat and help get back on it. But if they can't, that then who saves them?
The other boat.
Okay.
I mean, that's so I guess the question started out as, you know, if you have an entire boat full of swimmers, how are you going to chase down five or six swimmers? And I think you're right in the sense that that's a very difficult thing to do. But I think that ideally when you have people who have been in multiple flip raft situations before, have practiced self-rescue, have practiced whitewater swimming, that the idea is you're not chasing down four or five swimmers, you're chasing down one or two swimmers.
Cool. And I think R2ing helps with that, right? Because if you have like an R4 or R5, you potentially have a lot of swimmers. With R2ing, you know, the number of swimmers per boat is smaller. And which I want to kind of get into. How did you meet Dan? Like, how did that relationship start? And then where did you guys go from there?
I met Dan through the Oregon rafting team, of which neither of us remained a part of after meeting each other for very long. Because it was like, well, we could go paddle as fast as we can down the wind of the Clackamas, or we could go run the truss or the Little White. So, I met him through the Oregon rafting team. The first kind of trip we did together was the Green Truss. And this trip was definitely, could have been done safer. I'm not going to necessarily, I don't have a lot of defense for how this trip went. First off, I had to work at about 5 p.m. at my pizza cooking job. And Dan says, oh, no problem. It just takes a couple hours. No problem. You know, I had never seen the river before. I knew of it. He had done it two or three times before. So we had two R2s. He was rafting with Ben Sigler. I was rafting with his roommate, who was Robbie Dwiggins, who is also not particularly, he's a surfer, not a rafter. And at the time, I think he had only been rafting three or four times. So I'm I'm R2ing with a fairly green rafter who is fortunately very strong. The flow is about 4 feet. And Ben and Dan decided to run the flake line at Big Brother and flipped, and their raft sort of disappeared downstream. So we wound up with all four of us in one raft. Somehow, at one point, we wound up with only three paddles. And so I have a distinct memory of going over double drop on the green truss with four people in a raft with only three paddles. One person just kind of huddled down on the floor. Everyone swam. eventually, the raft was hung up on a log. We got the raft back. No other major carnage, but Robbie and I surfed in a hole for a little bit, and I got T-gripped, so I had kind of a fat lip going on. I just remember finishing the trip, showing up to work about 2 hours late after getting back to town, still essentially in the clothes I was wearing under my dry suit, with a fat lip. And I'm like, well, yeah, today didn't go as planned.
And you and Dan went on to do some legendary stuff after you met. Like, what are some of you guys' favorite trips you went on to go do, like, after you guys did that first trip?
I think as far as legendary, kind of the coolest trip we've done, as far as something that I'm really glad we did, but probably would not do again, was the Middleport Kings River in California. The put-in is at about 8,400 feet and requires a 13-mile hike. You're rafting all the way from the High Sierras down to below 1,000 feet near Fresno. You start near Bishop, hike up and over the Sierra Crest, and then pretty much raft all the way down the Sierras. The last day, you go through Kings Canyon, which is one of the deepest canyons in the United States. But it's just one of those epic trips. You know, the average gradient over the first 26 miles, I think, is over 250 feet per mile.
Wow.
Or around there, it might be like 230, but it's incredibly steep for that long of a stretch. I think the total length is about 40 miles once you include Kings Canyon at the bottom of it.
How'd you guys pack the raft in?
So, Dan, I'll give you guys a little... Zach, you know Dan, and Priscilla, you know Dan, but for anyone that doesn't know him out there, he's a huge guy. I believe he's 6'7" tall, and probably used about 200.
I was gonna say, used to be a professional Australian football player.
Yeah, so he's a very large, imposing dude, and so we rolled the raft super tightly, and we strapped it to a pack frame with a couple paddles, and then he put it on his back, and then I had, you know, all of the camping gear, all the wetsuits, PFDs, helmets. You know, I had essentially a full frame pack of rafting gear with then a dry bag, like a Watershed Mississippi dry bag hanging off the bottom with all of our camping gear and food and everything, and like the pump and stuff strapped onto the top. So I think I was probably clocking in at least 90 to 100 pounds of stuff, and he probably was sitting around 120, 130. And we we just hiked it in. We originally were planning on using mules, but it was a really low snowpack year, and so the river came to the right flow earlier than the mules were going, and so there were still kind of like snowfields and stuff that we had to cross on the way up there and post-hole our way through. But
So Jeff, I heard a rumor that you guys were a day late showing up to start the hike. What's that story?
A day late showing up to start the hike. Did you hear that from Matt King?
Matt and Jacob.
I mean, this is not.
So this is what I heard. So I heard that Dan was asking locals what the water level looked like at like grocery stores and whatnot.
Yeah, that sounds like Dan. there was a lot of deliberating, and we did not get a very efficient start on that trip, for sure.
Yeah, it sounded like there might have been some shenanigans.
Well, and the whole trip kind of, we wound up, because we got a heat wave, we wound up hiking out. Poor Matt, man. He had the roughest time, because we wound up hiking out. Because we were worried about levels, we were worried about the amount of food we had, and as well as the amount of time it was taking us to get down the river. And so, and Dan had some kind of an exam. I don't know if it was pharmacy or dental.
Yeah, but, I think it was doing dentist school.
So we wound up hiking out after. Because we had gone down the river a little way, so it's 20-ish miles, driving from Bishop, California, back up to Portland, Oregon, for Dan to take his test. Matt was going to come back down. We stashed the raft. We didn't bring the raft out. Matt stashed his kayak and stuff and was going to come back with us, and then changed his mind and wound up hiking back into his boat and hiking his boat back out. But we went up to Portland, Dan took his test, and about 3 or 4 days later, we drove all the way back down there. The plan was to meet up with Willie and Ben Dinsdale. They had some kind of an epic on Upper Cherry Creek, so we were at the takeout, and we wound up spending the night at the takeout waiting for them with no cell reception. And so in the morning, wound up driving and getting cell reception. So we were definitely a day late on our return trip. And wound up doing.
Maybe that's the story I heard.
Then we hiked back in to the raft and brought extra food. I think it took us maybe 3 or 4 days from getting back to the raft to take out.
And is that just because there was tons of scouting?
Tons of scouting, tons of portaging. It's an incredible run. You know, the top section has kind of some big slides and few waterfalls. There are some very gorged out sections. There's one point where we did this kind of up and around a gorge portage that has a 40-foot waterfall in it. And then there's another very locked in gorge that's kind of considered to be part of the same gorge, which a lot of our beta came from Darren McCoy, and he kind of told us that we would probably want to portage the whole gorge. And so we wound up putting back in at the first place we could get to the river, because we assumed that was the end of the gorge, and paddling into this locked in gorge that we had intended on portaging from internet beta. And so Ben Dinsdale kind of was in an eddy higher than we were and was able to kind of climb up to the rim and scout and give us verbal beta on how to run the rest of it. Because from where we were, there was just no scouting, no portaging options. We would have had to try and figure out a way to get back upstream to egress. And that section actually was fine. But the farther down you go, the more kind of granite boulders and civvy it gets. And the last 9 miles of the Middle Kings before the confluence with the South Fork Kings is considered to be one of the most demanding sections, because it's very continuous, bouldery, kind of has those really punchy California holes that just want to stop you. Lots of sieves and lots of stuff that you can't run. And so you're already kind of mentally and physically worn down at that point. And then you have sort of the most demanding section at the end. And it's slow going. You know, you're scouting. It's pretty much scouter rapid, run it, scouter rapid, run it, scouter rapid portage, you know. It's slow going out there. For a raft, especially, portaging a raft is not fast.
And, you know, after that, you guys did Fantasy Falls. How did Fantasy Falls compare?
Fantasy Falls is incredible. I wanted to do Fantasy Falls first. Dan was really, really set on the Middle Kings. Fantasy Falls it's much more of a river. It's sort of like it's bigger volume. And we elected to hike about a mile, mile and a half in to avoid like sort of the very beginning has a lot of mank. But after that, just tons of clean rapids. Fantasy Falls, we ran a lot more rapids. There were a lot more fun rapids, less portaging, still some portaging, but I want to say in 3 days, there's probably close to 100 class 5 rapids. It's incredible. The scenery is awesome. Big slides, big drops, cool boulder gardens. I think it's for that style of like expedition boating, it's got to be one of the best runs in the world.
So also, you guys are known for, you know, rafting a little white a lot. Like I know at least 50 times. I don't think anybody's really like gotten to know it in a raft the way you guys have. Maybe I'm wrong, but it seems like before you people would do it once, twice, three times. You guys, it's your training ground now. Like and I know a lot of people want to raft it. Do you want to talk about little white and maybe give people advice on like what it takes to get to that level?
Yeah. So the little white, I think, people underestimate the little white a lot. I think especially out of town boaters, because it is so popular, you know, but when you think about it, the people that sort of are always posting media on it are locals and pro boaters, you know, it's the people that know it. So I think that because it's so popular, there's a tendency for out of town boaters to think that it's kind of middle of the road or easy class 5. The little white is a very demanding run. The hardest rapids are at the beginning. It takes a long time to scout it. If you're scouting your way down, it's pretty continuous. And I think when you're boating at that level, your mental and physical conditioning really come into play a lot more, because mentally, if you're having a hard time or you have a bad line or a swim or something on a run like that that is consistently class 5 the whole way down, it's easy to start getting scared or kind of gun shy about the rapids and paddling worse, and then you get tense and then you get more tired. And then physically as well, you know, getting busy is the first rapid, and it's a long boulder garden. It's the Little White's known for its waterfalls, but there's quite a few boulder gardens on there as well. And if you're not in decent shape, you can wear yourself out. And it's only, I think it's a 3.5-4 mile run. But if you're scared and tired, it's going to feel a lot longer than that. So, you know, I think a lot of people do want to raft the Little White, and it's a progression, you know, you gotta, you really do have to start, you know, getting comfortable on the wind, getting comfortable on the green truss, you know, and putting the time in to where, because it's a step, it's definitely a step up from anything else in the area that gets consistently done. There is stuff out here that's very difficult that's not the Little White as well. But, you know, it's interesting too, because I have rafted the Little White with people other than Dan. Dan has rafted the Little White with people other than me. And it's definitely, if you come with Dan or I, it's different, because we do, we're actually, I think we're both at over 100 laps out there. So we know the rapids and stuff, but the first, you know, 8-10 times, it was taking us hours, because we had to, you know, scouting, getting busy is difficult. Scouting other stuff is difficult. And so it's definitely, and it's a serious run. It's a really amazing run. I think as far as concentration of whitewater for, you know, a day trip or a half day trip, it's really, it's awesome. But I think it is a serious class five run, and especially for, in terms of rafting, it's a lot different from what most people do. And so I think it needs to be taken seriously, and it's something that should be done by class five boaters, people that are already class five boaters, not people that want to be class five boaters.
Ignoring spirit, you know, from the lens of a rafter, what's the kind of rapid on the Little White that's like, holy shit, like this one's the hardest thing on here?
Well, the hardest thing on there is getting busy, just because it's very continuous and very technical. The rapid that, so we almost always portage spirit. The rapid that we portage most often besides spirit, which we don't, I mean, I've run it plenty of times and I've not run it, but there's a drop called Boulder Sluice, and it's kind of the first,
yeah,
of the bigger drops. It's maybe 12 feet tall, but it's got an entrance, and then a lot of the water kind of falls off to the right where there's a large rock that it kind of just wedges into. Some years there's wood wedged over there as well, and it's just a tricky, the way that the water moves and the entrance, it's a very it's a narrow line, and you need your momentum to be correct throughout the whole rapid to wind up in the right spot. And so I think that's maybe one of the, that's probably the crux in a raft is Boulder Sluice, assuming you're not running spirit. And spirit's not hard, it's just kind of
abusive.
I don't run spirit because it's a big drop onto green water.
One thing I want to ask you, I think a lot of people out there want to get into class five boating. Like, I'm hearing this more and more, especially here in the gorge, and they're into rafting. Like, what are some of the factors you think people need to do? Is it like practice, repetition? Is it finding a good team? Is it physical fitness? Is there more? Like, what's your advice to people out there that they want to like become a class five boater, do the truss, do the Little White, high water wind, that kind of thing?
I mean, the hardest thing for me historically has been finding people that actually want to do that consistently. And so, but I think it's a combination of those factors. You know, for me, I think the biggest thing about class five rafting, especially if you want to start, you know, it, pushing it and making it more serious, is a little bit of physical conditioning for sure, you know, but sort of the mental conditioning of being very comfortable in your boat, being very comfortable on water, you know, and so finding a good team and then going out a lot, right? Like going out and running class four, right? And consistently, you know, if it's like, oh, we're going to do, you know, the wind is at 6 feet, we're going to go do the wind instead of the Clackamas when we have the option to boat or whatever. And the whole thing is, if you get comfortable, so you get comfortable on the wind, right? And then you start running the green truss and you start seeing that at a different level of flows. So instead of having sort of the, you need to make what was your step up run, that has to essentially turn into your training run. And then eventually you're going to step up to another run. And the first time that's going to be scary and difficult, you know, but then you have to get comfortable at that level. And so it really is a progression, not just, it's not something you can jump into. Because the other thing is, rafting is a recreational activity. Like, we're out here to have fun. Like, there's no one that's, like, we don't have to go run the Little White. We don't have to go run the Green Truss. Like, it should be enjoyable. And if you're gripped and scared the whole time, it's, I guess, maybe a different kind of fun, but like progressing and doing it consistently, you're going to have a lot more fun when you're out there, when you're exploring, and when you go somewhere else to boat and see a new river and stuff. It's nice to be able to enjoy it. And so I think that the mental part of that and just sort of getting comfortable in difficult white water requires doing it consistently. It's not a once or twice a year type of thing. And I think if you want to be the type of boater that runs like the Little White Salmon, you got to be out there doing it and consistently running difficult white water. It's not a river for a kind of a part-time class five boater.
And the other question, that's an awesome answer. I love that answer so much. Thank you. The other thing I want to ask was, and this is kind of off topic a little bit, but I know you guys are using the airboats a lot. And I personally think for running the kind of stuff you're running, that's certainly the best boat. And I hear a lot of debate between the 130D and 130E. Do you want to talk about which one you like, the differences? I think a lot of people have that same debate out there.
They're both great boats. Dan and I ran a bunch of stuff in the 130D. We switched over to the E series a few years ago, and it was actually the first E series we got was the 140. It's like a 14.6, I think, and it was for because we were doing some more big water training and stuff like that, and then we wound up getting a 130 as well. But I think that the D is a great boat. It's a very versatile boat. You can row it. You can put a small paddle team in it. It's a good R2 boat. And it behaves like you expect the raft to in whitewater. The E is a little bit more, I like the E more for what we're doing. I think the pointed front gives less of a surface, so it punches through holes. The flat back actually will, sometimes you'll feel that thing, you know, your nose will go into a hole and you'll feel water load up on that back and kind of shove you through. Its surface is really great from drops. So I like the E maybe a little more, but at the same time, because of its shape, if you're kind of offline, the nose can get sort of smacked around by laterals because it can kind of present a bigger diagonal flat surface to features. So I personally like the performance of the E when you're on top of it and on your lines. I think that the D is a little bit more of a versatile and forgiving boat.
And yeah, that's kind of what I've been hearing too. I just got a 130D that I'm excited to try out, but a lot of people said you guys were stoked on the 130E. So I debated it for a while myself.
And they're both great. They're both great boats. And like, I mean, you'll notice the difference because you've been boating forever and you think about that kind of stuff. But I think for most people, either one of those boats is going to serve, you know, whatever purposes they want it for. I would say if you plan on rowing, personally, I like a more symmetrical boat for rowing. So I'd probably go for the D if I wanted one that I could put some gear in, put a frame on, and have as a paddle raft. Whereas if I was just paddle rafting, either R2ing or paddle captaining, I would mostly go for the E.
Okay. And finally, I don't know, Eric and Priscilla, if you guys have any questions, but the last one I have is like, what's next? What's on your radar? Is there some goal you have or some river you're trying to train to go do?
Not currently. Dan and I, this is funny. I haven't actually been rafting since September right now, which is a bummer. Trying to get out this weekend, but we don't necessarily have anything on the radar. The run that I really want to do right now, and hopefully we can make it happen this year, is the South Fork Merced in California.
That would be awesome.
Yeah, it's not harder than things that we've done for sure, but I've heard that it's just a really fun multi-day with lots of good rapids, and there's kind of that good level of class five where it's definitely feels like class five. But it's not like not going into the five plus zone. The logistics and the amount of dealing compared to the number of good rapids is supposedly very high on that run. So that would be probably the run that's highest up on my radar right now.
Eric, Priscilla, you guys have anything to add?
No, I mean, that was awesome. I really, really enjoyed the conversation.
Yeah, that was rad. I just want to also point out, Jeff is a really good IK-er as well. So, no, we didn't have time to, an inner tuber, probably maybe one of the world's best inner tubers. So, a man of many talents.
Those talents also just involve inflatables on rivers. So.
Exactly. The most fun. And maybe, one of the only people to have intertubed the Little White as well. So that you, Jacob, and Willie.
And Willie, yeah.
Yep. Which is a great video. Maybe I'll try to find it so we can post it to our website.
Well, cool. You guys want to head on to Gear of the Week?
Should we go on to Gear of the Week? Yeah, let's do it. Zach, do you have Gear of the Week?
I have something. It's kind of boating related. I just got this Makita Bluetooth speaker that uses like the Makita batteries, and it's amazing. It has a huge handle. It's got a, you put the battery inside of it, and it even has a place that your phone goes inside. So you can just like clip your phone inside and basically have a boombox that you carry around. It's super durable.
That's cool. Yeah. Very cool. So my gear of the week, again, sort of boating related, but, when I started boating back in the day, like the old school Tacoma was the car of choice for the dirt bag, and everybody kind of had their traditional fiberglass camp, like canopy that would go over the back, and you'd build your little house in that and live in it. And there's been sort of this new development of taking that kind of old school fiberglass canopy and building like a wedge tent that it's built onto it. And I saw a Go Fast camper in person for the first time, like a week ago, 2 weeks ago. And it's legit. Like, if you're going to be car living, it's a bit more expensive. You're paying a couple grand more than, you know, a traditional fiberglass canopy. But it's like the best version of a canopy in that it has fold up on all sides. So it's not just a fold up in the back or like, you know, small sliders on the sides. It's full fold ups all the way around that actually seal up really well. So your stuff doesn't get covered in dust if you're driving on dusty roads. And then the pop up on top and the way you can access it from inside. So you can actually build like full standing space inside, but actually be inside the tent camper deal. You've got a regular canopy when you want it, and then you just pop the tent up and you got a place to hang out and chill out, and you can have your whole bottom full of gear and stuff and still have a place to sleep up top. It's pretty cool. There's a lot of companies making things like that. But is it what?
Is it only for Tacomas, or for they make them for all kinds of trucks?
No, they're making them for all kinds of trucks. So, you know, I think it started with like Tacomas and Tundras. But from looking on their website, it looks like they've got pretty much most of your models out there covered now. And they're actually now making a like car top tent situation based on the original that was the truck camper that they're making for like 4Runners or anything you can put it on top of. But the truck version is cool because, you know, you don't have to, you basically can have it's more or less weight wise, wind resistance wise, everything else, just a standard canopy like you put on your truck. But then just has this pop-up tent thing that you can just leave on there 100% of the time and it's good to go. Huh. So it's like, you know, you have a home away from home every time you're anywhere while still having all the benefits of a canopy. So again, a bit more expensive, but pretty cool.
Cool.
Seems like the ultimate dirtbag lifestyle right now without having to buy a Sprinter van.
Yeah, I mean, it's not cheap though. I mean, I don't know. When I think of dirtbag, I think of like two-wheel drive Isuzu truck. throwing your Paco pad in the back, not like Tacoma with a full-on camper.
Or like a 96 Tacoma with a fiberglass camper. No, this is the slightly upgraded version of that. Yeah, exactly. For the mature dirtbag.
for the wannabe dirtbag with a job. Not the one who, you know, or like, you know, has money in the bank, not like the one who's basically boating on the money they have in their pocket today.
Yeah, no, exactly. The professional dirtbag.
Yeah.
So, Jeff, do you have any gear that you just absolutely love that you want to share with people?
You know, I'll throw out, because we've been talking a lot about stepping up your game and kind of running the harder rivers, I think the one of the big things that made a difference for Dan and I was starting to use, like, real solid paddles. Currently we're using the Sawyer Canyon X, which is a great kind of combination. It's not as heavy as some of the like guide paddles they had in the past, but it's stiff and they're very durable. But you really, I mean, if you're going to run class five, you can't be bending and breaking your paddles in the middle of rapids, which happens.
Yeah.
And so, you know, kind of stepping it up to something that's a little bit more durable, a lot more durable and kind of, you know, performance wise, I don't know how much, there's blade size and length that, and flex that you can change. Getting something that's going to hold up to rocks, and for your spares, too, you know, you rig your spares. A lot of times those are more exposed than the paddles you're paddling with, because if you're going under branches or if the boat flips over or something. So, I'm gonna go for paddles. And like I said, we're using the Canyon X, which is a Sawyer.
It's a sweet paddle.
It is a sweet paddle. And they look bitching, too.
Yeah.
I mean, they've got the combination of, like, real wood as well as, like, the wrap on them or whatever. I dig them.
Well, thanks Jeff for choosing to join us. This is a great conversation. I really enjoyed it and hearing about some of your adventures, and hopefully we'll get to have you back again, talk about some of the new ones you're going to go on. Zach, you got anything else you want to close up with?
Yeah, I mean, if anybody has comments, questions, our email is questions@rivertalkpodcast.com. And yeah, thanks everybody for joining us. Thanks, Jeff, for being here.
Hey, awesome. Thanks a lot for having me, guys. I really I appreciate the invite, Zach, and I very much enjoyed talking with you guys.
So everybody, get out there, go buy yourself a proper paddle, and go run some. Step up your game. Start planning the thing that's gonna be your step up run, and make it your home run and your training run. Have fun out there. Enjoy the wet West Coast. You know, there's water out there right now, so get out and enjoy it. Come back and listen to us on your next trip out. Gonna flow me into